With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Hello and welcome to the most electrifying podcast in sports today, The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Is it the most electrifying? Well, I guess that's up for you to decide, but we've got an electrifying guest for you coming up on today's podcast, episode 106 with Steve LeBou. And what is amazing about Steve is that he dives from 27 metres high. Yes, he is a cliff diving competitor, the high diving world champion from the 2017 World Aquatics Championships in Budapest. Only three men have ever won gold in that discipline, and Steve is one of them and the reigning champion. He is my guest on this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. Really good conversation with the American. Talks a whole wide range of topics. He's really good on the level of fear that is needed to compete in cliff diving, in high diving. You don't want to miss that part of the conversation. There's a lot that we can take out from it that we can use in our everyday lives. Listen to that conversation with Steve LeBou. He talks about his life and career before he became a cliff diver, where he was a standard platform diver, and then he worked on cruise ships. He lived in China. We cover all of those things with Steve. He also talks about how his life has now changed, that he's become a father. And we, of course, talk about the time when he hit his head on the platform and then landed in the water 27 meters below. Pretty scary moment for Steve. We talk about all of that on this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr with Steve LeBou. Before we get to that interview, I want to say about Patreon. Patreon is the place where you can support us. We've got a page called patreon.com/bestintheworld. It's a crowdfunding site where you can help support our show on a regular monthly basis from as low as, I believe, $5. And there's various different tiers going up from up to 5, 10, I think it's 25, 50. The more you help support us, the more great guests we can continue to get on the program and learn from. So that's patreon.com/bestintheworld. Well, we certainly will learn a lot from Steve LeBou. He is the high diving world champion, and he's up next on The Best in the World.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Steve LeBou, high diving world champion. Welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Delighted to get the chance to speak to you. It's just a few months ago that you became the world champion in Budapest. Have you got used to that yet?
Well, first, thanks for having me. I'm definitely excited to be part of the show and share my story. It's sunken in for sure at this point. We have a pretty long season in the summer with high diving and cliff diving. And anytime you do really well, they sort of stands out in your mind. So that competition, obviously, leaving there, it took a while for it to kind of hit home. And then maybe I remember like a week or two later, I called my mom. I was like, I'm world champ. So kind of took some time to sink in. But yeah, definitely really, really happy with that one.
What else have you looked back on your career and had a similar sensation with then, Stephen?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, you know, I started cliff diving in 2011 with Red Bull. There's a whole World Series that they do. And, you know, it's not until 2013 that FINA, the governing body for aquatics and the Olympics, have introduced the sport of high diving into their, you know, their world championship season. So it's still relatively new as a sport in the mainstream. But Red Bull has been doing competitions for a really long time. And I had my first competition in 2012 after only competing for a year. So to become one of the first guys to win outside of the normal, you know, guys that were sort of cleaning up the sport at the time was a really big accomplishment and something I hold very close to my heart.
Yeah, an incredible achievement. And I'd like to talk a little bit more in particular about that day and everything about it a little bit later in the program. But I think it would be quite nice to just get a little bit of an understanding about you, Stephen. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about your childhood growing up and where the initial interest in diving began?
Sure. So I grew up in Ewing, New Jersey, on the east coast of the U.S. And I remember trying sports as a kid. I think a lot of parents do that. You know, they have their kids sort of try as many sports as possible and sort of see what sticks. And I remember particularly disliking baseball and soccer. And I just was not a huge fan of a lot of these team sports that a lot of the other kids were doing. And I remember I went to like a learn to swim program at the age of 7. And at the end, they let you jump off the diving board. It's kind of your reward for being good in class. And I remember thinking, man, this is really fun. And then I saw the diving team come in right after that. And I remember looking at my dad and saying, like, this is what I want to do. And that was it. Like, diving stuck 7, and I had been competing on like an outside junior Olympic team, just sort of training. I mean, that was my sport all year round. It was outside of school, but yeah, that was my sport from a very, very early age.
So a real commitment. I know you went as far as Olympic trials for 2004. As you were growing up, how much time and effort would you have to put in? Because obviously you've got school and other commitments that every child has. What are we talking about in a day? Are you getting up early? Are you going straight to the pool after school, or are you doing both?
Well, it's quite interesting, actually. And as a sport, it's all year round. Growing up, especially, I think you get maybe 3 or 4 weeks off at the end of summer, maybe. But it's really an all year round commitment. And so, I mean, I can't count the times I've said to my friends, like, oh, sorry, guys, I have diving practice. Like, I can't join you. You know, I would go school from, you know, the full school day and then come home, drop my bags, go to diving for 3.5 hours, come back, scarf some dinner, try to get some homework done. And it was sort of a wake up repeat thing 5 days a week. You know, we'd have some practice on Saturdays as well. So definitely a huge commitment at a very early age.
And then you, as I mentioned, you got as far as the 2004 Olympic trials. When did you almost step away from the world of diving competitively?
I went to university at Purdue. I went to Olympic trials in 2004, as you mentioned. And even at that time, I was really, really, I was happy with competing, but I was still sort of looking past that. I think after 2004, I had a very realist notion that, like, okay, I'm not quite Olympic material. The sport brought me very far. It got me a scholarship to university, which, you know, I was super excited about. But you sort of have that moment where you go like, crap, I'm not Olympic material. So I really enjoyed competing the next few years after that. It was sort of, you know, I didn't have that huge Olympic drive, but I still was very motivated to do well, obviously, for the university and for myself. And then after I was done competing in college, I was really burnt out at that point. And I finished competing and I started doing sort of the entertainment side of diving, you know, like you would see in an amusement park, or you see these high dive setups, or things like that. And I was really interested in that aspect where you weren't being judged. You know, I was able to just do what I love and what came naturally, you know, without that pressure of being judged.
Fantastic. So you mentioned the entertainment there. What type of places were you diving at?
Well, so my first show was at an amusement park, Six Flags Great Adventure. And they have tanks and a high dive ladder set up, and you would basically just put on a diving show for crowds of people.
Oh, cool.
So I did that there. I did it at a place called Indiana Beach near, you know, where I went to university at Purdue. I worked on a Royal Caribbean cruise ship for 10 months. They had a show, like an entertainment show for all the guests on the cruise ship that included a high dive. I worked in China for a year doing live action stunt shows and sort of fine tuning some of those high diving skills and other stunt action skills. So just sort of performing all around, and you learn a ton of things, and eventually, you know, high diving was one of those things.
Wow. How was China for a year? How did you cope with the culture, the food, the people? How was all of that for you?
Man, I thought it was fantastic. I had a really great time and a really positive experience in China. I think, you know, it's a massive country, and it gets a bad rep sometimes, like some of those bigger cities with smog and pollution and things like that. But there are some absolutely gorgeous parts of China, and I was fortunate enough to live in one of them for a year. And I mean, it was great. I think if you just immerse yourself in a culture and really try hard, I think, you know, you can sort of enjoy it, and kind of even like the locals sort of look at you and they go like, all right, man, at least he's trying. Like, we'll give him some help. But man, I had an absolute blast in China.
Oh, amazing. And working on a cruise, that sounds pretty fun. Is it as fun as it sounds?
It, you know what, it is. It's absolutely as fun as it sounds. It's very different. I think there's a lot of rules that crew have to abide by in terms of, you know, guest interaction and where we're allowed to be at certain times. But it was really exciting. I think, you know, you surround yourself with other performers, people that are very passionate about what they do, and you sort of feed off of that. So it's a pretty positive environment in terms of learning and like honing your skills. You get paid doing what you love, so it really is a blast.
Oh, that's fantastic. You mentioned earlier about trying different sports, and you didn't really like baseball or soccer. One of the things I noted here is that you are still pretty good at snowboarding and skateboarding. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, I don't know what it was. It's not that I'm interested or not interested in team sports. I found the value of team sports, I thought, very interesting. And, you know, obviously with your friends, that's great. But I was always more interested in things that you do to challenge yourself and like challenge your own body in a very like individual way. So with skateboarding, it's just you and that tool. Like, so you're pushing your body and trying to maneuver this board all on your own, and there's really no outside distractions. You can kind of do your own thing. And same thing with snowboarding. And then diving, I mean, you're on a club team and you sort of score points for the whole team in a way, but it is very individual. It's you and your body on that board and what you can make yourself do. And so I always found those types of sports just a little bit more appealing.
Mm. And we've spoken a little bit about travel, and as you mentioned, in 2011 you took up high diving and then joined the Red Bull Series in 2012. When did you make that decision to take up that sport? Why did you make that decision?
Well, long story long, I guess, you know, you spend an entire lifetime acquiring new skills. So I started at the age of 7, all the way up through, you know, university. Here I am in China in 2000, just coming home from China in 2010, where I got a bunch of high diving experience. And at the end of the day, I have such a passion for the sport that you spend so long acquiring skills that are really, you know, useless outside of the world of diving, and you're not ready to let that go yet sometimes. And there are avenues to keep pursuing that passion. And so, when I came home from China, I had a buddy tell me that, you know, Red Bull was having an open tryout in 2011. And, yeah, just as a commitment to like my pure love for the sport, I was like, you know what, I'm going to take this next step. I'm going to challenge all these skills that I have acquired. You know what I mean? Like really put them to the ultimate test. And cliff diving and high diving is absolutely the ultimate test of, your skill of diving. So, I made that jump. I tried out in 2011 and I've just, been doing it ever since.
And it's 27 meters. Certainly that's what you won the world title with. And normally it's say what, 10 meters for normal, diving in a pool or a Olympic level. How much scarier is that?
It's terrifying. Oh my gosh. It's terrifying every time. And I can't imagine a single person that competes stepping up there and not, you know, everybody's scared. If you ask anyone, they will say they're scared. If they're not, they're lying. I mean, it's terrifying, and you have to respect that. I think, you know, that's kind of what gets a lot of us by, is that we understand our fear, and it's a very rational fear. You can get very hurt, but we all respect that. And that helps sort of keep you in the right mind frame. I always say, especially when it comes to fear with high diving, you have to keep your fear in a healthy level. And this applies to a lot of sports. If you're overly nervous, maybe you're not thinking clearly and you're going to do something stupid, and yeah, you'll probably get hurt. If you're too confident and you don't respect the dangers involved with what you're doing, you're also likely to do something stupid and get hurt. So it's just very important to maintain your level of fear when you're facing those types of challenges.
How do you do that, Stephen? Are there any processes that you go through?
It's definitely a learning process. Like anything, it takes practice. The problem is it's hard to simulate that kind of fear. we don't have a practice. There's a permanent 27 meter platform in the world at the moment, and it's in Austria. So it's accessible 3 months out of the year while we're already competing. So it's really not a huge help, but it's great to have, obviously. So it's hard to sort of simulate that fear in the off season. So really just a lot of mental and visualization work, really trying to picture everything about a dive and sort of making myself nervous on purpose, thinking about it. You know, when you think about something, your hands get sweaty and your heart sort of speeds up. I sort of force myself to go through that process. I force my body into that. And then I sort of practice calming myself down. So I'll think of a trigger that helps sort of bring me back down so I can kind of get my heart rate regulated and get my thoughts straight. So it just takes a lot of practice.
If you don't mind me asking, what is your trigger? What are some of the things which you think about to help calm you down?
No, I don't mind you asking at all. So for me personally, when I step onto a platform and you recognize the beauty in it, you're standing in a spot that only a handful of people in the world are privy to. You're competing in a sport that, you know, maybe 35 people in the world can do. Spent an entire lifetime kind of building up to that. And I have a very like Zen moment on the platform where all this stuff sort of comes together, where there's, you know, 25, 50, 75,000 people in the crowd, and, you know, they're there to watch this thing, this art that we're doing, if you will. And so for me, that all sort of calms me down, and I really try to just embrace the beauty in it and recognize how fortunate we are to do what we love in some of the most amazing, beautiful locations you'll see in the world. And that sort of helps center me and bring me back to where I need to be.
Which location has been your favorite to dive at?
Oh man, I gotta say Thailand. We went to Thailand in 2013 and we did a couple different locations in Krabi and Phibidan, and I mean, just breathtaking out there. It's beautiful.
Yeah, a lovely part of the world. I've been to Phuket a couple of times. Yeah, it's just,
okay,
and
awesome.
Excellent food as well.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, yeah.
we're
a fan of spicy food. So
you are a fan of spicy food, was that?
Yeah, so I enjoyed Thailand quite a bit.
Oh, Fantastic. I want to talk a little bit more about diet and food in a moment, but just while we're on the topic of the high diving, and as you mentioned, there's only one place in the world to train in Austria. So you're having to dive off platforms, which I'm guessing are 10 meters. How can that help you technically practice? And in some ways, I also want to move on to something which you're famous for, is being the one man who was able to do 5 somersaults and I think it was a half a twist in a dive. And that requires real innovation. How can you do that when you're not training on a 27 meter platform?
Right. No, fair question. And there is quite a bit that goes into it. I guess first and foremost, a lot of people sort of can paint us as like adrenaline junkies. We're going up, we're doing this thing, and we're all just chasing the adrenaline, when, you know, in reality, it couldn't be farther from the truth. A lot of what we do is very cold and calculated. And what I always say is the adrenaline is a side effect. It's going to happen. But what we do leading up to that moment is very calculated. And we will spend months training in a pool from 10 meters, or, you know, there are other training apparatus to use. And I think, you know, what you have to do is a lot of mental work goes into it as well. Because if you're up on 10 meter, you can do perhaps the first gymnastic portion of the dive. So let's say, for example, we're going to do back 3 somersaults with 3 twists. What I would do is go to 10 meter and I would do 1 dive, and it would be back 2 somersaults with 2.5 twists. And then I would go up and I would just do a front somersault with a half twist. So over the course of 2 repetitions, I've done the whole dive. And then it's up to me to mentally piece everything together. Mm. So yeah, a lot of times what will happen is you can break a dive into 2 or 3 different repetitions and then practice those 3 things. And then mentally you have to be able to put it together and trust that when you're on the 27 meter platform, the takeoff, when you exit and leave the platform, it has to be the same as what you're training on 10 meters. So there's a lot of mental work that goes into it. In terms of innovation and creating and how we can work towards bigger dives is, for example, they have belts on a harness system that would sit over a 5 meter platform. And you could, you know, with someone's assistance, potentially do an unlimited amount of somersaults and just practice in a safe manner, exiting the rotations at the right time into the water. So there's a ton of different training tools we have. And a lot of it just comes down to putting in the work physically first and foremost, and then mentally, obviously, you have to piece everything together as you go.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
The conversation with Steve continues in just a moment, but before we do that, I want to tell you about one of today's sponsors. And before I tell you that, if you want to be a sponsor on this Best in the World with Richard Parr podcast, send me an email, sportsdesk@sportacino.com. That's sportsdesk@sportacino.com. Just title it sponsorship or sponsorship for podcast, something like that. I'm sure I'll work out which email it is. And just think, we have an audience here which are interested in high performance, in sports, in Olympics, in world championships. And if you believe that your brand has good synergy with this, get in touch. I'm sure that we can do something great together. Today's sponsor is Audible. Audible is one of the leading suppliers of audiobooks in the world. They've got over 180,000 titles for you to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player. I've most recently been listening to Brave New World by Guillaume Balagay. It's basically a biography of Maurizio Pochettino, the Tottenham manager, throughout the season in 2016 to 2017. I really recommend that you take a listen to it. It's incredible to get this real insight into how a team operates throughout a season. Go and listen to that for free. You can do that by going to audibletrial.com/best. Audible give you a 30-day free trial to test out their service. That includes 1 free audiobook download. Perhaps it's Brave New World by Guillaume Balagay. Go and check it out. All right, let's return to the conversation with the high diving world champion, Steve Labou.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
we've touched on the mental side quite a bit, but what was going through your mind in the moments after you hit your head back in La Rochelle in 2015 when you were trying a dive there? Just tell us a little bit about that, and also what was going through your mind afterwards.
Yeah, I'm infamous for that platform hit.
Aren't you called the Miracle Man now, Steve?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, press, they like their nicknames occasionally, but no, it was, honestly, it was a very, very scary moment. When things like that happen, it's very quick. And I never reflect that moment. And basically, my overall analysis is just that I let my fear get out of a comfortable range, and I do have some bad habits, obviously, from my diving career. Like, I was never, like I said, not Olympic material. So I do have some bad habits that can create dangerous situations like that. And I had been working to correct those, but I think once, you know, like I said, I let my fear sort of get out of that level, man, I did what's called hipping in. So I jumped too close to the platform, and I ended up hitting my just above my left eye. And managed to land in the water safely after falling 90 feet. And then, you know, like I said, everything happens really quickly. The scariest part of all of that for me was in 2 weeks from that exact moment, I had to do it again in the next competition. There's no withdrawing or, you know, in my mind, there's no withdrawing or doing something different like that. Was I had to get up and do it again. So that was a little bit more taxing on me than the actual accident.
And how was the actual landing in the water? Because I've heard that if you don't dive in cleanly into the water, it can actually be really painful from that height.
It can. I think, you know, under those circumstances, maybe if I had done just that entry on its own, I may have been a little rattled. I don't know that would have had any injury per se just from that. Mm. There's always sort of potential for like a torn or pulled muscle or like even a strain. But you know, when something like that happens, I think my adrenaline immediately went up. I managed to guide myself to the water relatively safely, I think. And, so at that point I was just so kind of jacked up on adrenaline. The entry was, sort of a moot point.
Yeah, the adrenaline probably running through your veins. So we mentioned food, spicy food. What's your favorite thing to eat then, Stephen?
Oh, that's a loaded question, man. I love food. I think I'm perpetually just a little bit out of shape because I love food, and I'm okay with that. Like, if you know, if being world champion for years to come meant I had to give up food, then I would settle for second or third place and take the food.
Well, now you are world champion, you can eat whatever you want.
That's right. Yeah, no, you know, I don't maintain any particular diet per se, but I do try to control portion size, just be smart with what I'm eating, nothing crazy all the time. You know, I don't mind once a week having, you know, nachos or pizza or whatever. But I guess Thai food, man. I really like Thai food and Japanese food. So big fan of sushi and curries and things like that. Mm.
Can you handle your spice?
I like to think so. Yeah, I'm always willing to try something spicy. And I guess, you know, it's important to have flavor, though. You know what I mean? If it's just burning the tongue out of your mouth for no reason, then I don't see too much point in that. But I do enjoy a good spice. Like, if it's a good tasty curry and it's got some heat on it, I'm all for it. I like when, you know, my hair starts sweating. That's the good stuff.
There's a place not too far away from me which does spicy chicken wings, and they've got this one spice called the Viper. And what they'll do is you can order 8 different chicken wings, and one of them is the Viper, but you don't know which one it is. So it's called a snake in the basket.
And that's a Russian roulette game.
I had it once, and I didn't think I'd be able to speak for about 10-15 minutes, and I thought the pain would never go away. But I've been in that that bar restaurant since, and I've seen people crying, just water tearing from
maybe
their eyes.
Too much.
Apart from that, they're actually delicious. So I always end up going back there. But yeah, even when you think you can handle spice, sometimes there's always something around the corner which can catch you out.
Yeah, no, I fully agree.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your family, Stephen. And in 2016, you became a father. Congratulations! How did that affect your life as a high diver at all?
It was interesting. It was very different than I expected, and I think that's why, you know, if I just maybe had a little less expectation and just kind of played it by ear and let it flow, I think it would have been all right. But I think I was expecting to have this overwhelming feeling of like pressure on my shoulders to provide, you know, and I imagine anyone that has a family, or, you know, 90% of the people that have a family feel the same way. You know, am I going to be able to provide for my family? Can I feed them and keep a roof over their head? And those are very normal fears, I think, in daily life. So when my daughter came along, actually, it was quite the opposite. I felt very relieved. In years past, I've been quite concerned with my overall like positioning, because it is, it's prize money on a sliding scale. So how well you do directly affects how much money you make and how much, you know, you're able to provide for your family in turn. So I had put a lot of pressure on myself in the past, but it had, like I said, quite the opposite effect, where it was very freeing, where like cliff diving was almost a vacation from being a dad of a toddler, of an infant. So I kind of went there and was like, you know what, even if this all ended right now, I have something more important in my life that is going on, and something that I can take care of. So it was, like I said, very freeing. It sort of relieved a lot of that pressure for me. So obviously now traveling as she's getting older is getting a little more difficult, because she realizes I'm gone all the time. But in terms of just having a daughter and how that really affected, you know, my life and the sport in general, all positive stuff.
And I'm sure in those future years, she'll be watching you on YouTube or on the Red Bull website going, oh, there's daddy.
I hope so. Yeah, I don't want to be a lifer in the sport. Obviously, the you can't do it forever. It takes quite a toll on the body. But yeah, I've got a good few years left, and just going to put everything I have into it, and hopefully have a couple more successful seasons. And man, I'd love to take her to an event. I took her to Texas this past year, but she not quite there, like in terms of recognizing what's going on. So maybe in another year or so, we'll get her out to a cool location.
And your wife was also a very talented diver. So does that mean there's going to be another talented diver in the family then?
We'll see. She definitely loves, I throw her around and flip her around a lot. She loves swimming class. You know, if she wants to do it, that's cool. I'm going to sit by and let her go. But I just wanted her to be in some sort of sport. I think, you know, most parents, same thing, just kind of want her to be active, whatever she chooses. Obviously, we'll be fine with that. But yeah, I think we'll definitely give diving a try.
Fantastic. Well, let's round this interview up where we began. Let's talk about Budapest. Tell me about how that whole experience went for you. And also, was there anything different about this event in the preparation you did, in certain things which happened, that was perhaps different to, say, other events at all?
Well, looking back, and like I said, I've done a ton of reflection on this event in particular. This event was at the end of July. So it was, for us, we had been on the road competing on Red Bull and some other competitions the whole month of July. So every single weekend we had a competition. And it was interesting because this was the last competition. Everyone was a little sore, a little beat up, but pretty comfortable, at least with the height, like feeling more comfortable after you do it, you know, a little bit in a row, you start to loosen up a little bit. So I was at least feeling really good mentally. And yeah, it's interesting because I compete against all the same guys throughout the whole year. And I'm sort of a roller coaster type guy. I can do really well, or I can not even, you know, make finals. It just depends on the day. And I just remember coming in that second day and feeling really good about everything mentally. I was in a good position, you know, in the competition. So I just felt like I was sort of in a position to kind of take control. And Yeah, it's weird, man. And a lot of athletes can tell you, especially elite ones, there's something about, like, you know, you hear people say getting in the zone. And it's really hard to replicate. Like, when it happens, it just happens and you sort of feel it and things just sort of go their way and it's all very natural. And that's how I felt. I was sort of outside of myself watching everything happen. So it was a pretty cool experience. And it was nice to get a win, obviously, in what was the most important competition of the year.
We have touched on getting in the zone with a few of our other guests before. Have you had that experience any other time in your career?
I have, definitely. Yeah, there's been times too where, you know, I've had a couple victories on tour. That obviously sets in there. And then there's even times when you don't win, but like maybe just it comes together for you and you do, you know, pretty well. There are times when you kind of get in the zone, whether it's for the whole competition or not. But yes, I have had experiences with that feeling. And yeah, if we knew how to replicate it, obviously there'd be a ton of really great athletes in the world, but it comes and goes as it does. And yeah.
Well, hopefully if I keep doing this podcast and keep speaking to you world and Olympic champions, we'll get to find out exactly how it's done.
We'll find that common denominator there.
Hopefully one day. Well, Stephen, it's been really good to speak to you and to learn from you and hear about all of your amazing career. Just before you go, can you let us know where we can continue to follow your journey online or if there's anything else you'd like to mention?
Fantastic. And thank you very much. I appreciate all the time here. You can follow my personal page on Instagram or Twitter at Ive Labou. And Stephen Labou on Facebook. And then if you want to follow along with the Red Bull Cliff Diving World Series, you can go to redbullcliffdiving.com. They have all the latest info on all the divers competing in the World Series, as well as some of the wild cards. And you can kind of look back on video and familiarize yourself with the sport. If you haven't checked it out yet, I recommend that. Also, you can follow USA Cliff Diving, which is, you know, the four USA guys kind of banded together and we've got a good thing going. We're kind of generating a lot of content. So if you're just interested in hanging out and watching some cliff diving, that's a good one too.
Superb. It's definitely one of the best sports, I think, to watch visually. What you guys do is incredible. And it's been incredible speaking to you, Stephen. Thank you for being on the program and thank you for being the best in the world.
No problem at all. Thank you.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Great to talk to Steve on the podcast. Steve's not the only high diver that we've had on this program. Gary Hunt has been on this podcast. Maybe go back and listen to that episode. We've had a few swimmers on as well. Nathan Adrian's been on the podcast. Natalie Coughlin. They're all in the back catalogue. Plus, we did talk about fear with Steve. And Casper Steinpfaff was on the program only a few weeks ago. Go and listen to that podcast. He is a paddleboard world champion with an excellent insight on the topic of fear. Go and check that out. They're all available at Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Acast, on Podbean, and of course at sportacino.com. All right, that's it for this week's podcast. I will be back next Thursday with another episode of The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Goodbye.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.